Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
I'm Philip.
Today, we have so much to cover. We have not talked in forever.
Oh my, it's been literally months. Not for you, but for us.
Yes.
We had a good stockpile of content, and so we're glad that that you're listening to it. But today, we are speaking today on the day of the release of the AirPods, which could be, but by the time you hear this, who knows what year it'll be at our rate of release right now. So
hopefully,
man, I miss
week.
You.
I'm, next week.
I'm so glad we're back.
I know,
we're
man.
Back.
We're back,
this is
baby.
It. Feel like we're back. Anyway, we want you to give us some feedback about today's show. And we're always asking for that. We want you to leave that on futurecommerce.fm. Just go down to the episode, click on the episode title, scroll down to the very bottom, and you'll see that discuss comment box. We want you to leave that in there, and we want you to start that discussion with us so that everyone else can get on in that conversation. You can also subscribe, because we don't want you to miss any episodes of this podcast and any others that we publish, and you can do that on iTunes and Google Play, or you can do it right from your Amazon Echo these days with TuneIn Radio by saying, Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast.
By the way, speaking of comments, thank you so much, yeah. Daniel Nettleton, for that thoughtful comment.
That was great.
Recently posted. I really enjoyed reading that, and I appreciate, you know, hearing people join in on the conversation.
It was a very long form, sort of well thought out experience. His experience with VR, and interesting because he mentioned some of the sort of the headache, queasiness, dizziness that you get, which is interesting because I feel like that was the center of the conversation a while ago, but I haven't heard people talk about that in VR for a while. So I wonder if just the hardware or the software is getting better to where it's not so doesn't provoke that sort of reaction as much anymore. But really liked hearing back from you, and keep it coming.
For sure.
Could we talk about literally anything other than Amazon Go at this moment in this podcast?
I don't think so. Today? I mean, this is like the topic. And frankly, I mean, I think we might do a full-on predictions episode coming up here. But
ooh,
I mean, I
like that.
Yeah, I think maybe like in the next couple episodes here. But
well,
the predictions for 2017. So a little preview to that. Amazon Go is the future.
Amazon Go is the future. What's crazy is it's the future right now.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
It's the future in the way that Starbucks thinks that voice ordering is the future. I don't know. I love the fact that Amazon is doing this. If anybody can do this, it's Amazon. For those who don't know, this is a basically a grocery store where there's a concept that's already up and running in Seattle, I think, question mark?
I don't think it's right? in Seattle, actually. Actually, I think it is
Portland.
In Seattle. No, it's in Seattle.
I think it's in Seattle.
Yeah.
So it's up and running. It's sort of this open beta. You can, if you have, as long as you have the Amazon Go app, you can walk right into the store, and you can pick up any item that you pick up off a shelf through some means of product tagging and through image recognition and some software that they have running on cameras in the store. They sort of add it to your virtual cart. You walk out with the items in your bag or in a basket, and done. It just charges it to your Amazon Prime account, which is like exactly the thing that I wanted for Christmas, and nobody knew about it.
Well, it's not Christmas yet, so, you know, maybe, you know, Amazon Go coming.
It could be. That could be under the tree is an Amazon Go store in West Palm Beach, Florida. We are probably more likely to get Google Fiber at this point than we are.
I'm not so sure about that. I think that they...
Yeah, it's been discontinued.
They pretty much finished that, yeah. I think Amazon Go actually will be a model for, you know, not just Amazon going forward, but, you know, a lot of other businesses.
It is so hard not to just talk for a straight hour about Amazon, because we actually haven't spoken since reInvent.
Oh yeah. Immortality.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You know, there's a million things that we could talk about, but let's talk about Go for a minute, because I think Go is sort of the best of everything rolled into one.
I'd say it's the best, like most tangible implementation of a lot of things that Amazon's been working on for a long time.
The thing that I get concerned about is they create these experiences. They provide, I mean, ostensibly they're providing everything that you could need through their AWS, you know, platform, for you to be able to create your own experiences. And many companies have, you look at Netflix and some others that have built their entire businesses on the backbone of AWS, and you can create some truly amazing things. But I still get the feeling that there's some proprietary stuff going on there that's not necessarily available to everybody, that sort of makes this really special and does it well.
Yeah, that's true. But I will say this. I don't think people have to copy the exact model of Amazon Go. There are other things that people could do that would result in, you know, the net result would be the same. And so,
like what? Like, give me an example.
I mean, you could just like have people scan, like even a barcode. I mean, I'm just so tired of checkout. Like, let me buy something and walk out with it, please.
Right.
That's, I mean, at a very base minimum viable product level, there's things people could be doing right now. I think that they're just scared to do them. And I can't wait to see how this goes, because, you know, I think it will empower merchants to say, wait a minute, they're not losing a ton of, they're not having a whole bunch of theft. It's actually a working model. And so I can do some iteration of this on my own and probably for a lot less than Amazon put together the Go store. Although I will say about Go, I think it's only open to employees right now, I believe.
Yeah, it's a closed beta. I think that's employees, and there were some reporters, I think, in the beginning.
To be fair,
sort of let it.
That's like a quarter of Seattle. So
you said something which I think is sort of key, which is I don't want to spoil anything. Have you seen Rogue One? Star Wars Rogue One? Have you seen
that yet? Not yet. I hope to see it this week.
Okay, I will try my best not to spoil anything for anybody.
Anybody, man. Anybody.
Yeah, or even you. But just you could also just, if you're really scared about it, you could just zip forward about 30 seconds. But yeah, here it goes.
Should I cover my ears, Philip? I mean, honestly.
No. There is a moment in this movie where they basically do something with computer graphics to place somebody into a scene, which is just a mind-blowing moment in this movie. And they do it in such a way it avoids the uncanny valley. And you don't think about it because you're not really thinking about CG, because it's not obvious that it's CG. But so I'm listening to the Incomparable podcast with John Siracusa, and they're talking about the application of CG in the Star Wars films. And they basically said, you know, it's sort of the douchey Apple phrase, which is, you know, it took courage to do this, but it really does. It takes courage to step out there and be the first person. Like, you're never going to get to a place where we have full CG films that basically look photorealistic, like real humans acting, unless somebody takes the first step. And you're never going to get to a cashless society or to a cashierless society in retail without somebody taking the first step. And is every first step going to be good? No, but the first step has to be courageous. And I think this is incredibly courageous, because it may not be the best shopping experience in the world, in that it's not particularly useful to most people who don't live in Seattle, or at this point, anyone who does live in Seattle that doesn't work for Amazon.
But only 3/4 of the city. So,
but I do think that it's incredibly important for retail and for digital commerce in general to bring the sort of automation, the sort of autopilot trusting of the system to out of the online world and into reality. And I think it's incredibly brave. This could be the thing that next year we say, wow, you remember that? What a terrible idea. But I do think,
yeah, I don't see that happening. I could be wrong. I'm going to double eat my words, but there's a lot of times where you think
things are going to be you think that things have incredible potential and they just can't make it work. maybe something's too early. I think we'll see. But if anyone can pull this off, it's Amazon. And I think it's a really bold move.
Yeah.
And I really want to see this continue. Like, I would love to see this. Well, we have this already, actually. And
so
about 4 years ago, the state of Florida decided that most of the toll operators in south of Orlando were no longer needed. So they moved to a toll by plate technology, so where they actually.
I'm not going to lie. That system's not very brave. It's actually really inefficient.
What is that? The toll by plate?
Yeah, it's
No. It's annoying, and it's terribly annoying.
It's really expensive,
especially if you're visiting.
Like, really expensive. Yeah, it is. To process. Yeah. No. Not for like drivers, but like for the state to process.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure there's a lot of reason. I'm just trying to draw an analog here, which is to say that. You know, I have been driving around without thinking about it for 10 years with an RFID in my car. That is, you know, like it's called the Sun Pass, which is, you know, like the Easy Pass in New York or wherever else. It's, you know, I've had this sort of experience on toll roads for 15 years. It's about time, I guess, is what I should say. It's about time that this comes into another area of the world.
It's ridiculous.
That's so far past due at this point. I'm going to take back my brave statement. I think it takes some courage to do this in a world where it could be exploited tremendously if it's not done perfectly. But I do see, this is a huge turning point. I think 2017 is going to really, I don't know. It's really the make or break for retailers.
Are we making this predictions episode? Like, I mean, I don't know.
There's so much news to get through. Let's just keep going.
Wait, I want to dwell on this a little bit longer because I think there's another point here that we haven't talked about, which is Amazon is not just making a statement about the future of shopping. It's also making a statement about the market. And what I mean by that is, oh, hey, brick and mortar. you guys have been stagnant for a long time. And like we just said, this has been due forever and no one has done it. And now Amazon, they're not just saying this is the future. They're saying time to move out of the way, people who don't innovate. Because we are coming to brick and mortar and we are going to do it better than you guys who have been sitting around and not changing the experience for years. I think it's finally time that someone did that. And I love guys like Dean Flynn and Healy Cipher, who are also making investments in this and dragging the industry forward. But it's also good to see a big brand out there saying, you know what, this is it, and now we're going from an online first mentality to, hey, you know, we're just an innovation company and we're going to reinvigorate the world. and honestly, this is actually the second step into this that Amazon's taken, or maybe the third, even second or third or fourth, but they've done the bookstores. They beat Barnes and Noble online and kind of drove them out of business that way. And now they're swinging back and opening bookstores. And there's one in University Village here in Seattle and other places. And they're killing it. They're absolutely killing it.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
Have you been there?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like.
It's interesting.
Yeah. It's not that.
It's still a bookstore.
It's still a bookstore. You know. But they do have like some pretty cool stuff there. They got all of their tech right there in the middle of the store. It's sort of centered around the tech, if you will. And some cool little stations for finding things and so on. So, I mean, I wouldn't call it groundbreaking, but it's interesting. It's always hopping and it was Amazon's first planting of the flag in brick and mortar. And now I think they're coming and saying, hey, this is actually our territory too.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome. I think that's, it's needed. Competition is what drives innovation, and it drives the market forces kind of drive the drive costs and prices down. And I think what I really think is really interesting, and I'm probably not the right person to do the deep dive on this, but I think it's a really interesting play that Amazon sees themselves when they're in retail, when they're in like real world retail, they see themselves as an upmarket play. This grocery store that they're demoing is, you know, they see themselves competing, it's like the corner store. It's not a terribly large, this is not a massive grocery store.
It's like, but fast the range of, almost.
Yeah, but the range of products seems to be pretty diverse, but they all happen to be high end.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily brand name, but high end sort of, you know, fashion food.
Yeah.
And possibly, you know, in the organic sort of space, like the Eat Well kind of thing that they're sort of putting forward, which I think is interesting.
It is interesting given that they compete with Walmart online. Right.
Yeah. Given that their play online has been to, you know, to really go for the throats of the suppliers. They drive prices down. They drive costs down. And they have a price play with extremely thin margins online. And it seems like they're going the opposite when they come into the real world.
I mean, that might really be like an interesting point. Like, it may be real world shopping is actually going to be at a premium in the future.
So that's the point that I wanted to make, which is, I don't know. We're sort of spoiled. I think we are competing. I don't know. Amazon doesn't really compete with anybody online as much as Walmart, I think, is coming up in the marketplace sector. There's no one else that's even, they have twice as much of a head start on this stuff as anybody else. And they have twice as much market share, I think, as the next biggest online marketplace, which is at least here in the United States, which I think would be walmart.com. But, you know, worldwide, I think Alibaba is like 14 or 15% behind them. But anyway, long story short, I see it as we've sort of been trained for this autopilot convenience sort of coming at not a premium, but $99 a year. And we have tremendous value that's packed into that. We have Amazon Prime with the 2-day shipping. That's what it sort of started at. Now we get movies, we get TV, we get music, we get free Kindle books. They keep value add. And now we're going to be expected to have this, to pay a premium for that same convenience in the real world. I think it's more of a brand play. It's more of loyalists and people who favor the brand
for
of
now,
Amazon
for now
over. Yeah. I don't see them competing with Walmart in the real world with this sort of a technology, unless they license it out to be acceptable, as a thing that they can retrofit in any retail experience. Maybe they use this as their, you know, I don't see them competing with grocery chains in 20 years. That's what I'm saying.
Interesting.
I see this as, you know, Amazon is all about platforms, and that's what, I don't know, they're a platform company. That's how I see them.
I think they're an innovation company. I think that they invest in everything and see what sticks, and that's how we ended up with Alexa.
Speaking of, actually, that's a great transition.
That was a good transition.
I want to go away from this, hopefully. Hopefully, maybe you've got some thoughts. Leave us some feedback. We want to hear what you think about Amazon Go.
Because we have more. It's pretty transformative. I mean, really.
Yeah, we could probably talk for an entire hour about this. So actually, there's a couple other things I want to mention real quick, because again, we haven't spoken since reInvent, but two major components of what actually makes Alexa work were announced as individually accessible products on AWS. So there's two pieces that make Alexa work. The first is the AI, which is it's the actual engine, the AI engine that interprets intent out of, out of a phrase that's being given. So if you do any, Echo or Alexa programming, you'll understand what that phrase intent means. And it sort of understands intent and it sort of maps intent. But the thing that actually does the voice to speech is another. So that wasn't accessible previously. And the thing that actually does the voice to text to be fed into the AI engine to map the intents. That thing wasn't accessible either. And they've been given names now, and they're both individually accessible via Amazon. Amazon Web Services. So Polly is the new AI engine that is now accessible. Lex is the Lexer, which is that voice to text engine. And it's really interesting because I've been playing with Lex as a voice to text engine, and it's not perfect. But it looks like it can be used pretty well for even really bad audio. Like you can take some audio that's pretty mangled and feed it through Lex, and it comes out the other end pretty well translated. And apparently it works with like 40 plus languages. So it's interesting. Those are both accessible today.
I'm interested to see how people use those. Are they going to try and build, you know, sort of their own Alexas of the world?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I mean, ask Starbucks, because Starbucks apparently is itching to do this.
Yeah.
Hey, there's a segue for you.
That was a segue, man. That was a good one. So Starbucks has announced its chatbot. And to be fair,
it's a voice thing, right?
Isn't it? I think there's a bot in chatbot involved as well. We should double check this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure. Like they basically came out and said, "Hey, we have a digital assistant now.
Yeah,
and you can speak to it to order your drinks." And right. I'm thinking to myself, "This is the most useless thing. Why didn't you just put this into Siri, which is on a billion devices? Why didn't you put this into, you know, Alexa?"
That's actually one thing we should talk about. Cause like, for instance, Bank of America also came out with their own voice or their own bot.
They have a voice thing too? Are you kidding me?
Is it just a bot? It might just be a bot.
Okay.
No, I think it is voice. I'm pretty sure it's a voice.
But why?
Yeah. So in short, and this is a big question, I think, are brands going to have their own literal voice versus come in on platforms? And I think, I can't remember if we actually covered this on the show before or if we just talked about it. But one of the ideas that I think we were discussing at one point is the idea of like the personal assistant, which I think Alexa and Siri and Cortana, et cetera, are becoming, versus like an outside bot that has its own personality, and how our personal bots may end up sort of interacting with those other bots and filtering them. And we may end up talking to brand specific bots via introduction from our own personal bot who sort of is our voice pop-up blocker. If you will. So as we get closer to voice push notifications and sort of reach outs via voice from brands or people or people's bots, personal bots, I think our personal bot might become sort of the gatekeeper of our time and so on. And I know we're pushing, this is the future. Like we're talking several years from now, but as companies build out their personal bots, I just wonder, you know, what will that interaction look like? When will we discover those bots? How will we interact with them? Like what will sort of help guide us to using them? Because right now I have no incentive to go use a personal, like a brand bot, brand specific bot. And I think that as merchants and businesses, you know, our listeners need to be absolutely thinking about this. Like, do I actually need to go invest in this, or should I just go out and leverage what you know, Google Assistant has already accomplished for me, and work my brand into that experience, or do I do both? You know, I think it's a big question, and I think it's something that we might help provide a little guidance on here in the future.
Yeah, I think there really is no middle of the road. It's either going to go fully federated, like you're talking about, where, you know, We have everybody sort of has their own sort of personalized bot, like the her future.
Right.
Right. The where you have a something that's extremely personal for you. Maybe that's something that comes from another corporation.
Was it so personal? Was it?
Okay, fine. Yeah, maybe you have to watch the movie, I guess. But the point that I'm making is it's either extremely personal or somebody wins the new platform wars. Right. And I think that it, you know, if history is any example, we're probably closer to the winning the platform wars, because valuation and shareholder value is entirely based on eyeballs today and users and user base. And so
but for merchants,
Starbucks,
I mean,
well, for even for a merchant, like, I mean, Starbucks is going to be accountable to its shareholders because they're a public company.
Yeah.
And if they spend millions of dollars investing in voice enabled cappuccino ordering technology, and it's not widely accepted or widely used from its, like, they've had a string of really, really good decisions. Was it Howard Schultz any more than he needs to
except
be,
except for losing the Sonics. Hey.
Well, they have a few things. You know, I saw somewhere where bringing fast food into the store, like breakfast sandwiches and small plates.
Oh yeah,
has increased top line revenue by like 18% year over year.
Starbucks,
that's massive.
Has made insanely good decisions.
Yeah,
I mean,
and now beer and wine served in some stores in different markets. That's a massive thing. I think these are great decisions that I think play well to consumers. And you know, the revamping of their rewards, I think, is a huge change for them, and has created apparently a lot more engagement with customers. Ordering, mobile ordering is another thing that I think has engaged people in a new way. But do people need to talk to their phone? And I think the answer, I think,
I want to call it one more awesome thing that Starbucks has done, and that was their loyalty program, which is worth more than several countries in the world. Like, there's more money sitting in that loyalty program.
Oh yeah, I saw this. Where did we see this? I saw this recently. Remember,
we were looking at that, and it was just like, oh my gosh! Like,
yeah, they have more money sitting in
it's like
in
2 point something billion, right?
Yeah, at any given time, you know, you have to reload a card. And so you front a bunch of money, which Starbucks then, you know, presumably acts as some sort of a bank, with a GDP that's larger than, you know, most, half the nations on earth. And they take that money and then they make more money with it. Who knows what they're doing with it. But it's interesting, you know, they've got a lot of, they have an insane loyalty, insanely loyal, customer base who, many have been coaxed into purchasing every day at incredibly increasing, average order values. But even beyond that,
which does not include a lot of Seattleites, by the way.
Yeah, I figured that, right? There's probably some, yeah. But my point is that they've also got a lot of really interesting programs and incentives to bring people back same day.
Yeah.
So same day purchase, which is just mind blowing. They've done a great job.
No doubt. No, Starbucks is killing it.
If
here we go. Like, the question is, like, is this another thing that they're making a really good decision? I mean,
I think investment in the space is a good decision. I think making your own thing that you talk to in their app is the dumbest decision they could ever make. They're going to lose that battle.
It's just going to be gone.
It'll miraculously, like, what'll happen is it'll be mentioned somewhere somehow that they're also now on Alexa and that they're also now on Siri. And within a year, that thing will be phased out of apps. I just don't see people using that because you want to go where the people are. Apparently, I don't know this for sure. Early estimates of Alexa devices being sold for holiday 2016. In the 20 to 25 million range.
That is insane.
20 to 25 million Alexa. That's like almost double what the GPS craze of, you know, 2008 was. Everybody bought a GPS in like 2007, 2008 for Christmas. Like, Garmin couldn't keep up. You know, the sites were down for days. Nobody could get their maps. Everyone was opening up a GPS on Christmas morning. But the thing that will be open underneath the Christmas tree in 2016 is going to be an Alexa enabled devices, probably an Echo Dot.
A Dot, yeah.
The Dot's $39 on Black Friday special. You know, people are buying them by 5, 6, 7 at a time. It's crazy. And that's where the people are. And so why would you not invest in that?
Yep.
Uber did it. Uber, one of the most, you know, their market caps, well, Uber's not a public company, but Uber's like a $50 billion company. They thought it was a good idea to invest in Amazon's platform. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think it's a very interesting play. I think it's
well, I wonder if they'll
them
do
testing
both.
A market. That's but a,
I can't help but wonder if like they'll eventually
they'll
add.
Do both.
Yeah, I think you have to, and it's not just Alexa.
You have to.
So like if you're gonna be you're gonna have to address all your channels, right? All of your platforms. Because if you just go with Siri, you're leaving out all of the Android users. If you just go with Google, you're going to leave out all of your Apple users. And if you just go with Cortana, then you're stupid. So
okay, that's a great punctuation on the end of that sentence. Let's just keep moving. Some things that may be happening. This is completely crazy. These are completely out of left field. But why don't you mention a couple of these here? We have a few opportunities. You could actually see us possibly.
Yeah.
At some industry events pretty soon.
For sure.
The Future Commerce Boys will be out and about.
So I think we have an opportunity to work with the IBM influencers team at NRF.
IBM, the IBM, Big Blue.
And also potentially a few other events, their own events and others. So pretty excited about that. We also were accepted as press at Shop Talk. So we'll probably be
press there. At Shop Talk.
And there's other things on the horizon. I'm not going to give it all away. So
no, yeah. You want to tease. It's like what I call the tantric podcasting method. It's you got to build the anticipation because the anticipation's half the fun.
No joke.
Right. That's the point.
Speaking of so like other things that happened recently. So the other day at 6 in the morning, I got a text from Messina Bot, Chris Messina, and it said, "Want to get a drink?" Oh no! It was fancy a drink, and then never mind. And I had not prompted anything, so
oh my gosh!
Either Messina's out there on this Messina Bot, and you know, drunk texting people, and you know, I don't know. I messaged him back and said, hey, man, I don't think you meant to message me, but we'd love to have you on the show. So, Chris, if you're listening, we would love to have you on the show.
Chris Messina, if you're listening, please come on the show.
that was pretty funny. So it could have been, I wonder if it was a glitch in the bot. Although that doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's more likely he was like, accidentally hit something. I don't know. Who knows? Why would you say like I don't know why the bot would say never mind. Either that or Chris was
a bot that just says never mind. That's incredible.
Maybe Chris was doing a little market research.
Yeah, the Kurt Cobain bot might say never mind, but Chris Messina bot doesn't have any.
Good Seattle joke there, kind of. You know.
Speaking of bots, actually, we Nordstrom is getting into bots, thus completing 2016 as the year of the chat bot.
Yeah, for real. Messina called it. Speaking of Messina.
Yeah. Speaking of Chris Messina, he called it. Actually called it maybe 3 years in advance, but he called
no,
it.
No, didn't he? He officially said 2016 year of conversational commerce.
Oh, did he say 2016 is the year of the chatbot? I don't remember
year
that.
Year of conversational commerce. That was him.
Well, that's it. Well, we'll see if it actually sticks, but conversational commerce was one of the reasons we started this podcast to begin with. It's interesting. So if you look at this chatbot, have you seen this chatbot?
I haven't really played with it yet.
So the Nordstrom chatbot, you know, the first thing that you'll see, so it's a businessinsider.com, this filed under business intelligence.
They would.
Sorry, I had to say that. So the pool, it's like they, you know, they do this big, the big leaderboard graphic that they have up there is the potential. I love this. Like, how do they even, they tell you how they came to this number. This is amazing. The potential annual U.S. salary savings created by chatbots. And so as you scale up, we start with insurance sales representatives on the left, which is a potential annual savings in the billions. You could potentially save $12 billion in insurance sales per year.
Yes.
By using chatbots, because who doesn't want to speak with a Turing incomplete insurance sales representative? That's what I'm looking for. Okay, so there's that, the Turing test, they'll fail that. What's next? Oh, securities and commodities. Well, that's interesting because I don't know why I trust that more than I would insurance sales. But we did talk to Jonathan Taylor, right? And with our friends at Link, I'm so sorry. That's wrong. Jonathan Taylor at,
what are you trying to get at?
Wait,
where are you going?
The securities and commodities. Who does that? That's, Sentient. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. Sentient. Yeah.
Epstein.
Jonathan Epstein.
Epstein. Too many Jonathans. Jonathan Epstein at Sentient. He, Chris, you can just cut that out in post, but that's never going to happen. We'll just roll with it. The, essentially, you know, there are basically AIs and bots that are doing trading and stock picks today. So those are things, but way over on the right is potential $23 billion in savings, annualized savings, by moving customer service representatives to chatbots. And that's the big pull quote here. So it's like Business Insider, not really concerned about what Nordstrom's doing so much as that it's just, you know, excited that we can put people out of jobs with chatbots. Here's what I love. At the bottom, estimates are calculated against the potential of bots replacing these positions, where customer service representatives would be up to 29% of all customer representative jobs would then go to chatbots. And this just kind of reminds me of the whole South Park, they took our gerbs kind of thing. You know what I mean? I find people, my word.
So, you know, yeah, no joke. I agree with you. I kind of feel like chatbots are actually I'm not going to call them the least of innovations that are going to put people out of job, but they're not at the top. There are a lot of other things that are going to cut down on need for jobs besides chatbots. And I feel like people are stating a lot of pretty ridiculous numbers right now. I just don't see it, at least not in the near future.
So when you go to the Nordstrom chatbot, you go to the actual Nordstrom chatbot, they'll tell you 4.2 million people are using the Nordstrom chatbot. It says it right there. It says it like right when you click on it, 4.2 million people are using the Nordstrom chatbot.
I wonder how much traffic they stole from their site.
I don't know. Here's what I do like about the chatbot experience though, because I'm actually on it right now. So this is like kind of the cool first blush thing. When you actually start the Nordstrom chatbot on Facebook.com or on Messenger, it actually says like it guides you through a sort of like a guided shopper, like a personal shopper sort of a thing. So it'll say, where would you find yourself on the weekends? And the options are hosting a party, making a playlist, heading out of town, or I love this one, going to Comic-Con. And, you know, and then the options sort of get, you know, more specific from there, but it's to sort of, I think, get, it's like, you know, trying to get into who you are and sort of, you know, guide your style and suggestions. And it does make product suggestions. It does link you offsite out to Nordstrom.com. What I think really is interesting is that they didn't just invest in Facebook Messenger. They also created a chatbot for Kick, the instant messenger, which I honestly thought was only for dick pics. I don't know. I did not know that Kick was for anything else.
Don't you know that Nordstrom? Don't you know Nordstrom shoppers are the same demographic? I know.
I suppose. It's interesting. Yeah, Kick is very much for a much, much, much younger demographic. It's a very interesting thing. I think this sort of seals it. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I think that they needed to do it, or I shouldn't say, I think it was inevitable. And I, you know, Nordstrom has sort of always sort of pushed a little bit of the cutting edge. And that helps them sort of maintain their premium brands. And I think it was probably the right move given where they're positioned.
I mean, think they might be the largest company doing chatbots now.
Well, what about
Fortune 197?
Starbucks?
Starbucks, Fortune 500. Let's find out. I don't know.
Oh, Starbucks.
Where are they
wins.
In the Fortune 500?
Starbucks wins.
146.
Yeah.
146. So Starbucks is the largest doing chatbots. Well, they don't do chatbot, though. You have to speak to your dumb phone.
No. There's chat, too. I checked it out.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's chat.
And was it on Facebook Messenger?
I think it's in your app.
Oh, of course it is.
Getting back
why,
to
why would it be on? why would it be on
Wait,
anything
no, hold
else?
On here. Wasn't Starbucks like one of the first? No, okay, this is the best. So, oh man, I can't believe I remembered this. I remember when Starbucks cut a deal with Microsoft Office to schedule meetings at Starbucks, and I feel like that was like I feel like that is a little bit indicative of the types of things that Starbucks does. I don't know.
Wow.
Did you remember
that?
Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know.
I did not know that, but that sounds really dumb.
Yeah. I remember it was a pretty big like announcement in the Northwest because we have a Starbucks on every corner. So everyone was like, oh, I have so many more meeting rooms, and it was just ridiculous. So
anyway, either we're probably a little off
topic
there.
Off topic.
I think it's interesting.
We're way off topic.
I think this seals the deal. Maybe the largest. Let's say that it's to see another department store kind of go that way. Interesting. I think we said not 10 episodes ago that buying clothes online through a chatbot is quote unquote the worst way to shop for anything online ever. But it's interesting.
It is. Yeah, no, and I think you have to start somewhere. So it's going to get improved over time. Also, like I think a lot of those companies that were doing shopping experiences up front via chat were kind of startup-y, and Nordstrom's
got
like a huge fat budget to throw behind this, which doesn't always guarantee good results, but it definitely can help maintain consistent iterations of something. And that can lead to good results. So,
I know all roads always lead back to Amazon, but I forgot to mention 2 days ago, was in Forbes on Forbes.com. The very first delivery of an Amazon drone package.
Yes, I saw that.
They delivered popcorn. And it took place in a sort of a beta. In the UK, because of fewer, flight regulations. So, really, really interesting, stuff happening over there.
I feel like this is a little bit weird given that we had a 7-Eleven, like how long ago was the 7-Eleven delivery happened? And frankly, I was a little more excited about that. It was a breakfast sandwich and a cup of coffee, a little better than popcorn. I'm not going to lie. A little heavier, too.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
and I mean, but did they spill the coffee? That's the question. Oh, we don't know.
I mean, it was probably sealed.
Probably in a thermos.
Yeah, sealed shut.
Probably sealed. Sealed.
Oh, man.
Interesting. All right. Anyway. Speaking of which, you remember you were saying, will other companies build... I know we keep going back to Amazon. It's my fault. I keep bringing it back up.
No, so but Amazon has a lot going on right now. Like it is.
And we haven't talked about any of it. So yeah, it feels like it's a lot.
It is.
So I was just looking because I was trying to find other Fortune companies, other Fortune 500 companies that are doing voice or chat. And it actually led me back to reInvent again, which is Capital One just built a voice app.
Oh, yeah. It's been out for a Capital while, right? App. Capital One is killing it, by the way. Killing it.
Yeah, they've got they've really kind of modernized in sort of that digital thing where, you know, there's a lot of the messaging now is about, convenience and security around, you know, managing your account through apps. It's interesting. But they built their own voice experience and they did it with a lot of these Alexa skills, which are now public. So they're like Polly and Lex are both big pieces of building the Capital One voice experiences for banking. So
I wonder if it's better than the Bank of America one. I bet it is.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm not a fan of Bank of America.
I don't use either of those companies. I don't really care about that stuff so much. I'm more interested in the, I'd like to see companies build or invest. You know, it's interesting that for instance, this is a good example. They have an Alexa skill so Capital One has an Alexa skill, but they also have their own voice experience in their app. And I think that's probably the right way to go. So maybe that's what we'll see other companies do.
I think that's what I was driving at before. Like, I think that companies are going to have to do both. The question is, how are they going to interact with each other, if at all? So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And I think we should definitely do a little bit more coverage around that particular topic, and I think we will. I think it's really important right now. So let's talk about something other than Amazon for a second.
Please.
AKA, for crying out loud. Let's talk about Apple for a moment.
Let's do it.
Another A company.
And then we'll talk about Alphabet after that.
Okay. I can't wait to talk about that. Kind of more excited about that than I'm actually excited about this too. So AirPods, they're here. They have arrived. AirPods, and they are legit.
Only 2 months late. 2 months late, but apparently every early review says they're awesome.
And I'm not surprised, really. I think, after talking to Jason Baptiste about, his Bluetooth headphones, I think it's such an obvious step to move away from cords. I have a really nice pair of headphones from Bose that I love, but the cord drives me crazy, honestly. Like, it doesn't make any sense that in this day and age that we can't be wireless. And then I think ultimately the play here is let's get Siri into people's ears because right now talking with AI on your phone is really embarrassing because it talks back and it's loud and it's not always accurate. But if it's your ear and nobody else hears it, it's like talking on the phone, which is a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, I think also, it's sort of bringing in, it's not necessarily just the voice activated because everyone's kind of doing the Hey Siri thing, which is there, but this brings gestures sort of into play. So like you can tap,
double tap for Siri.
And that right there, I think is the right way. I think, it brings some accessibility questions into play, but I think having...
Can you do both?
Having it,
can you also still say, hey, Siri? I bet you can.
I don't know if there's a wake word. I'm sure there is.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
But it's just an interesting play because I think that it's something that we don't know that we need yet, and we'll know that we need it after we experience it. I really wish that Apple was still had a better penchant for design because I do think that they're sort of drifting. It's a little bit evident in a lot of their recent product releases. I think it's a little dopey looking.
Hold on.
No, I mean this.
Yeah, but like the new laptop, I know that it's taken a lot of criticism. Oh,
it's beautiful. It's beautiful, gorgeous. But it's beautiful, but it's taking some criticism. I don't really care about all the things that people are griping about. The thing I care about is, look at the last Magic Mouse, which can't be used while it's charging. Right.
That's just awful.
That's a good example.
I used it and I hated it.
Yeah. So it's one of those, you know, there's a couple of those little things. And I think the fact that you kind of need the case for the ear pods for everything, including syncing to a device, that's a little bit annoying. You'll have to have them around for, have to have that case around for charging too. But I think they've already addressed some of the hard stuff, which, and the case is kind of dopey looking. It looks like a dental floss, like container. I don't know. It just doesn't smack of Apple. It's just strange. But anyway, I like it and I'm excited for it. I love the idea that also, and this is the first we're seeing of something like this, when you pair your, the earphones or the AirPods with your any device that's connected to iCloud, all devices that are connected to iCloud are already going to be paired with those AirPods. So this is seamless sort of integration between you at work on your laptop or desktop and you on your phone. And you no longer have to sort of switch contexts, because your context is in your ear, and really we're moving toward
voice first, baby.
But this is more like attention based. It's more about where you're focusing your attention. I think we can get really smart with these devices of sensing where our attention is focused, and sort of if you can imagine in the near future where the AirPods sort of seamlessly operate between where your attention is focused, between your phone, your iPad, your laptop. But you could take a call on your laptop or be speaking to Siri or listening to music on your laptop and seamlessly flow to your phone and get in the car without any interruption. And I think that is something that can easily happen, right? That can easily happen in the near future with the world that they're building.
Yeah.
So we're very close to that. And I think that, again, it's like the always connected, but sort of in a different way than I think anyone else is going right now. And that's what makes me really excited.
Yeah. I'm stoked. Speaking of stoked, I think Mark Zuckerberg is stoked on AI right now.
He's secretly been working for like a year on his own. So he further confirming that everyone, or that he at least one person in the world, and that's Mark Zuckerberg, thinks that he's Tony Stark.
I think there's more than one person who thinks that.
Do you think that?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. He doesn't have the Playboy, you know, confidence sort of thing going on, I don't think. But it's interesting. He's created Jarvis. He's created a connected AI that connects everything in his life, which I think is incredible. He wrote an article. He posted it on Facebook.com, as you know, as he should. And he wrote basically his journey over a year of creating a very connected AI for him. Which connects everything from home automation to like home automation in a crazy way, like unlocking his door based on face recognition, right? For he and his wife. And he also has UIs like an iOS voice app and a messenger bot and command line tools for him while he's programming. But he's connected a bunch of systems. Even to the point, like he's done some crazy stuff, which is very Tony Stark. He wanted to find a toaster that he could give voice commands to. But he says that one thing that sort of stymied him was that he found out that every toaster that he tried that was built in the modern era sort of has the feature of being able to press the toaster into the down position to put the toast down is disabled when the toaster is not plugged in. And that, I guess, keeps you from doing something bad. I don't know. It's a safety feature. So he had to go back and find like a toaster from the 50s that would allow him to, you know, push the toast down. So in the morning, the bread is in the toaster, and then he has a wake command in the morning that turns the power on to the toaster and then it toasts his toast. It's like just ridiculous. He also has a t-shirt cannon to shoot t-shirts at him to wear, you know.
This sounds like a mix of 2001 Space Odyssey and freaking Back to the Future.
It's like Back to the Future because it's sort of that hokey you know, Doc Brown kind of, you know, everything's sort of convenient, but in a sort of like an overly complex Rube Goldberg sort of a way.
It gets back to interesting. Like Ray Bradbury. I know we mentioned a couple of his short stories on the show before, and I feel like he really called it, man. Like, I love his stuff.
Well, what's interesting is that we haven't heard from Facebook about, you know, Facebook has built a platform for chat, but we haven't heard from Facebook about building connected AI and home automation and that sort of thing. He also sort of, you know, says that he continues to predict that we'll have, you know, personal AIs within 5 to 10 years for, you know, that are more accurate than people's actual senses. It's interesting. He said he spent over 100 hours building Jarvis. You know, I don't know.
I think we covered that in our last two episodes, or last episode, I should say, that we broke into two episodes. In short, you know, I don't think he's the only one who thinks this. I think there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, in the tech community who really genuinely believe that in 5 years that AI is going to play a significant part of our lives. In fact, I was reading a study recently that said that did we talk about this already? I don't know. That by 2020, we'll have more interactions with our voice assistants than we will with our spouse.
Oh, okay. No, I don't remember us talking about that. Although it sounds like something we would talk about.
Yeah, definitely. I wish that I need to cite that. Definitely. But
yeah, you should cite that. You need to find what that is and cite it.
We talk about so much. I mean, it's hard. Yeah. In fact, speaking of talking about a lot of stuff, we should publish some of that, man. Maybe we should.
We should probably have a I would love to have, I know that we're faking now because I think we've already talked about some of this, but I would love to have a place where people can see like news and articles in this, you know, future commerce vein, but with our editorialization around it, but sort of like that unfiltered once we first talk about it kind of take. Yeah. Where you can sort of see our initial impressions and maybe then how that evolves.
It's our chat that runs a thread across like seven different platforms, you know.
Yeah, which is so true. Like we can't even figure out where we talked about something because we're on too many chat platforms.
Which is annoying. By the way, Google, please merge Allo and Hangouts.
Please, oh my word, please.
Please, please, please.
And get rid of Messenger. Like bring everything into one place for crying out loud.
We'll have to say that on the next episode too, because I am really,
We'll just keep saying
frustrating.
It's interesting. I think if there's something that I really like is sort of like blog aggregators, where they find the best of the best, they bring it all into one place, but they speak with a consistent voice, that sort of, you know, give an editorial position on the news as it comes out. Yeah. And I think that we have a very specific voice and maybe one that is better consumed on a day-to-day basis than just waiting for a podcast to drop.
Totally.
And so I think it's interesting. I'd love to hear what people think if they would read a blog like that or if they would subscribe to an RSS feed that sort of has that daily best of the best.
With our commentary.
Exactly. With our commentary. That's the important part. You just need more of us.
Yeah.
But
speaking of commentary and us talking about things, something I really don't want to leave behind before we close this episode up, because I think we're running out of time here. But we talked about Apple, we talked about Amazon. I think we need to take a moment and talk about Alphabet, the other big A, if you will.
The trifecta of A's.
Yes.
Yeah.
who's building who has an incubator out there or maybe not an incubator. It's a project of some sort. I don't really know what the structure is to build a futuristic city, really, where they take advantage of all of modern technology and sort of build the city to really function in a truly, you know, in the technology age. I think that's really cool. It's very ambitious. It's very Google-esque.
It is.
But we were talking about this, you know, in the pre-show.
Yeah. Yep.
And
yep.
I had this thought, which is, why get so ambitious? We have some unbelievable technology coming out here ahead in AR and VR. And VR is actually getting to the point where, it, you know, it's really quite usable. And there's actually a lot of content for it now. And, you know, we have legitimate systems coming out where you can really start to have presence. Why, instead of building an entire city, why don't we build tech-focused communities that are really focused, you know, on actually, we were talking about even an open source community where Google or Amazon or somebody goes out there and basically builds sort of that a base blueprint for home builders. And then people contribute to that, and they use it as kind of a platform to get out there and build connected communities that are more standalone and like small town almost, you know, neighborhoods.
Or, I mean, just even neighborhoods. Even, yeah, neighborhoods.
Neighborhoods.
Just neighborhoods. Yeah.
So work with, you know, neighborhood planners and home builders and actually, you know, instead of putting it all in one spot and driving the price of real estate through the roof and, you know, creating these weird sort of, I don't know, modern bubbles of housing and things like that. Why don't we spread out and get back to, like, it's almost like we could go back to small town America, but all work together and work with people across the world. You know, it's, we have the technology to do that. And it seems way less ambitious to me to do that than try to build an entire city. I could take this even further where I could see some company like Magic Leap, who's focused on AR, having like their sort of AR flavor to this. And, you know, communities are built in very minimalist ways that lend themselves very well to AR. And people are, and I could start to get way deep. I mean, there are also incubators out there around private based income. And, you know, instead of doing private based income, why don't you apply to be a part of the Google community and get free housing, get food at cost, but it's actually a lengthy application that requires,
keep going.
I know. I'm playing to the future right now. Like this is pushing the future, but I don't think MVP on this, the minimum viable product, is like getting some plans out there to get a project going around this, the community driven project even. Back to my story, you know, people are in, they're committed to creating things in the AR world and building beauty, digital beauty and digital goods that could then be sold throughout the US, into homes, and sort of generating revenue and have that be your model community. And I know that's like a very like starting point and probably the high end version of what I'm talking about. But I think there's a lot to be discussed here. And if people, I don't want to be so arrogant to say that I'm the first one to say this out. I know that I'm not, but I think this is something that needs to become a reality and fast. And I think it can.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's awesome. I love the idea of open source. Open source is what has powered the innovation of the digital age, and especially around digital commerce. Open source has made what everything we do possible. Android is a pervasive operating system. It's open source. Linux is the pervasive operating system for servers. It's open source. You know, the SSL, you know, open SSL is the way that we communicate everything securely online. Anything that happens over TCP that is secure is happening over SSL or through open, you know, through open SSL, which is an open source project. All of Mac is running on BSD. You know, I basically the world lives on open source and dies by open source. Why wouldn't our neighborhoods run on open source?
I love it.
Why wouldn't our neighborhoods, or even like, what if we branch out from that? What if from the neighborhoods we have roadways and infrastructure that's open source that help us to crowdsource solutions that to a growing problem, which is urban sprawl and the you know, greenfields and brownfields and the way that our cities and our urban planning is evolving to actually create distance between us. Why wouldn't we want to go back to a time where we had higher amount of collaboration with the actual public, with the people? Bring that sort of thing out of the hands of I don't, you know, this is really idealistic, but bring it out of the hands of a few people in government and bring the people back into the fold in making those sorts of decisions. And so we don't just play in neighborhoods. We can get to cities, but I think open source has to be the heart of that, to where any city, any neighborhood can adopt this and put it into motion and contribute back to it to make it better. You know, these things are hard, but I think if anyone can do it, it's Alphabet, it's Google.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway,
I agree.
Very, very interesting stuff.
Yeah, I think we just put a lot at the end of the show there. It's probably a good place to close, but, you know, for those of you that have a voice in this world, I don't think we have too many home builders listening to our show, but you may know home builders. Start talking about this idea and, you know, start looking for communities that might start popping up around this idea, and see how you can contribute.
Yeah. Love it.
And with that,
that's a great place to, that's a great place to end. Close us up, man. That was good stuff.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to Future Commerce. We want to, you know, we want your feedback about today's show. So please leave us feedback in the discuss comment box below or LinkedIn or Twitter or however you want to leave it. Leave us some feedback. Let's talk. If you're subscribed on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We'd love that. You can also subscribe to listen to Future Commerce on iTunes and Google Play, or listen right from your Amazon Echo with the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast, and listen right there in your home.
Right now. Echo. Listen right now.
Gotta use that Echo. Love the Echo. Love your dot. Love your dot.
20 million one of them sold.
You know you have a dot.
You've got it. It's sitting right there right next to you. We've triggered it 13 times during this
Alexa,
episode. You
Alexa.
Know it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Brian, for challenging us at the end there. That was great.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
I think that's good stuff. I can't wait to see what happens. And until next time, keep looking toward the future.